The next case is appeal number 09-1633, Buchanan versus Astru. We welcome back Ms. Goldblum.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, counsel, I'm Marcy Goldblum on behalf of the plaintiff, Geraldine Buchanan, on behalf of a minor, J.H. Your Honors, this is a complicated case, and the administrative law judge committed several errors that require remand. In the case of a child's disability, after finding first that the minor isn't engaged in substantial gainful activity and that there's a severe impairment, the first thing that the administrative law judge is supposed to decide is whether the minor has an impairment that meets or medically equals one of the listed impairments. In this case, the administrative law judge says, and this is on page 17 of the administrative record, the claimant does not have an impairment or combination of impairments that meets or medically equals one of the listed impairments in Appendix 1. The undersigned considers, and she mentions several listings that she considers, and concludes, but does not find in the medical record evidence that the claimant's impairments meet those listings. That is simply not enough. She tells us nothing in terms of what she's considered. It's mere conclusion and nothing else. Now, the district court said it was harmless error because she proceeded to the next step and considered whether there was functional meeting of or equaling of the listings. But that doesn't work either. Because
is there evidence that she actually met the listings?
I think there is, actually.
Did any doctors find that she met those listings?
No. No.
At least in the Social Security records I've looked at, you get pretty similar conclusions on listings unless a doctor has said.
You know, but there's an interesting point there that actually comes up again in terms of functionality. In terms of the idea of equaling one of the listings, that's a medical conclusion. And in this case, after there was a state agency reviewing doctor who reviewed this case in, I believe, May of 2005 and said it doesn't meet or equal. And that was then another state agency reviewer in September of 2005 reviewed it and said affirmed as written. So none of those reviewers looked at any of the evidence that was in this file that had been submitted after September of 2005, which there was a tremendous amount of evidence. So there was not a medical opinion that the ALJ relied on in saying that they didn't meet or that it, more importantly, didn't equal the listing. And in this case, there was a tremendous amount of evidence. But for the sake of argument, let's move to the next step. Let's move to the functional part. At that step, the ALJ looks at various domains. There's six of them, but the ones we're focusing on are acquiring and using information, attending and completing tasks, interacting and relating to others, caring for yourself and others. Well, I'm sorry, just caring for yourself. Looking at number two of that, attending and completing tasks, one of the state agency reviewing physicians, Dr. Proper, in June 21st, 2005, reported that there was a marked impairment in that domain. The ALJ never mentions that. She finds that there was less than marked impairment in that domain, and when talking about that, never mentions the fact that one of the state agency reviewers, who she appears to credit, at least in terms of the overall finding, but never mentions that Dr. Proper had said there's a marked limitation in this domain. That's legal error. She doesn't mention it, let alone explain why she's not following it. Social Security ruling 96-6P says that the administrative law judge has to explain the weight that she gives to these state agency reviewers. And I would pose that when the state agency reviewer says there's a marked limitation in one of the domains, the ALJ finds differently, the ALJ has to at least say and acknowledge why.
And the district court agreed with you on that.
No, actually,
the district court found error, but said it was harmless.
But it was harmless.
Right. Okay, so why wasn't it harmless?
It wasn't harmless because that wasn't the only error that the ALJ made. And particularly in the domain of interacting and relating to others, the ALJ seems to recognize that that domain has much to do with behavior, interacting with other people. This youngster, the records show, may have been extremely limited, but the ALJ's focus seems to be that there was improvement, and I don't think that's consistent with what the records actually show. I think if you go through the records, you see that there may have been a little bit of waxing and waning in terms of some periods where she may have had some better weeks, but that as you look at the whole, this child was deteriorating. And for the ALJ to find that there was less than marked impairment in interacting and relating to others because there was improvement just doesn't track the evidence. There's a January 2007 IEP that explains that her behavior had worsened over the past several months, causing a negative impact on her school progress. She had been admitted to a day program in February 2007. And here's the interesting thing. The government has argued, although in the context of, in a different context, but they argue that the later reports probably would not have altered the state agency reviewer's opinions. That's speculation. That's nothing but pure speculation. In the Wilder case, this court made it clear that mental impairments are complicated, and neither judges or lawyers are the experts in it. In this case, we don't have a medical expert who's reviewed any medical records beyond September of 2005, which is a tremendous amount of evidence. We've got the remainder of 2005, all of 2006, and most of 2007. Now, I'm pointedly not arguing any of the evidence that was submitted to the Appeals Council. I recognize that that was not raised at the district court, and we're not raising it here. But the findings that the ALJ made with regard to the domains here, one of the things that are talked about very frequently are, did the ALJ paint a picture? Did they make a bridge from the evidence to the conclusion? And we pose that here, the ALJ did not draw an accurate and logical bridge from the evidence to her conclusions. And if I may just touch on one point in terms of credibility. And this is also important because the ALJ finds that in terms of attending to and completing tasks, that whatever problems this youngster may have had, they couldn't have been marked because she managed to get C's and B's in school. And if you look, though, at the exchange in that testimony, that's not exactly what happens. What happens is we've got this very troubled 12-year-old, and when she's first asked, what did you get in your last grades, she said, I didn't look at my report card. And then the judge says, well, did you get B's, C's, D's? She says, oh, B's, C's, which we're not saying that that wasn't a credible statement from the youngster, but what we're saying is it's not enough for the ALJ to have hung her hat on to find that despite everything else, she really didn't have problems attending to and completing tasks. And the other thing in terms of credibility is that if you look at it, there was no actual credibility finding made. Social Security ruling 96.7P says it can't be implicit. It must be explicit. And here, other than the one single sentence saying that with regard to needing to work in a collaborative environment in order to stay focused and on task, she credits that sentence of testimony. But with regard to everything else, the ALJ is silent with regard to credibility. That, again, if we look at Golombowski, we look at Social Security ruling 96-7P, that's not enough. I would ask that when you look at this case, you recognize the many legal errors and that you remand the case so that this very troubled youngster can get a full and fair decision on her case. Thank you.
Mr. Guerin.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is James Guerin, and I represent the Commissioner of Social Security. There's no question in this case that the child struggled and continued to struggle with serious problems. The ALJ recognized that she had those problems. The ALJ did not make any effort to minimize the significance of those problems. The ALJ talked about concerns of her teachers about academic delays, social skills problems, not following directions in school, daydreaming, and so forth. The fact is, however, that serious problems do not equate with disability. The bottom line in determining child disability is functional limitations. The ALJ found that she did not meet medically equal or functionally equal listing because her problems did not impose significant enough functional limitations. Specifically, what that means is that the marked limitations that are required to demonstrate disability have to indicate that these limitations interfere seriously with the child's ability to perform the activities. Now, if we look at the four domains that the appellant is challenging before the court, the ALJ acknowledged regarding acquiring and using information that the child had average to low intelligence. She had some obvious problems set forth in the IEPs. On the other hand, she had passing grades, and she passed from one grade to the next. She wasn't held back. Now, I would reiterate our point.
How much weight should we give that fact?
It's a lot of social promotion that goes on.
Well, I think we have to assume that the school is exercising some sort of responsibility. I would go back to the point about the grades that she received. The appellant has made a fairly big issue about the ALJ relying on the child's testimony that she received B's and C's. The significant point here, however, is that there is no evidence to the contrary, none. At the hearing, the child's attorney did not suggest that this testimony is not reliable. We need to clarify this. There was no post-hearing memorandum. At no point in the course of these proceedings has the appellant attempted to correct that impression that the ALJ had. What else can the ALJ rely on? The ALJ relied on uncontradicted evidence and testimony. Now, regarding attending and completing tasks, the ALJ noted that the child had problems when she was left on her own. She did not perform well independently, but she worked well in collaborative situations. And again, she was able to attend and complete tasks well enough to receive passing grades and to be promoted to the next grade at the end of the year. She required close supervision. Basically, what we have here is a child with significant problems that are being addressed by the school and that are being addressed by physicians, and that are basically, she is able to get by. She's got problems. She hasn't been cured, but she's able to function. Regarding interacting with other people, she had significant problems in school. The record is replete with getting into arguments with her classmates, getting into fights, and so forth. The ALJ also noted, however, that the child had friends at school. She had friends at home. She went home after school. She went to this after-school day program, did homework with other children, played with those children, returned to her neighborhood, played with those children. She got along well with her family. She was not functionally unable to interact with other people.
Does the record indicate whether she was getting attention, this child was getting attention through the child welfare system in her home city?
I do not know, Your Honor. I don't recall seeing anything like that.
Okay.
I believe that the extent, as I recall, the extent of the special attention she was receiving, aside from what she received in her normal classroom, is she received some special education in math.
Given some of the detailed history here, I would have expected some of that, but it may not be at the core of what we need to look at. So.
And finally, the last point, caring for herself. Again, the ALJ, the record shows that this child had problems with judgment, with social interaction. There were references to issues of sexual involvement, of alcohol, possibly drugs or marijuana when she was much younger. But the ALJ also noted, again, that overall she dressed appropriately, she communicated her needs, she was able to communicate her needs, she participated in sports, she participated in other activities with other children. Regarding the issue of credibility, the ALJ actually did state near the end of her decision, and that's in the appendix of plaintiff's brief at page 12, that the claimant's statements, when considered in light of all the other evidence, really did not support a claim of disability. This general statement is consistent with what the district court found, that in effect the ALJ found that the claimant was credible. Significantly, the appellant has pointed to no statement that she made that would, if it were true, if the ALJ had accepted it, would have resulted in a different outcome in this case. The only point that she even mentions is that at the hearing, the ALJ asked Ms. Buchanan, the grandmother, a question: why do you consider the child to be disabled? And Ms. Buchanan responded, I can't understand her when she speaks. Now, this may well be the case. She might not be able to understand her, but she was the only one who had that problem. Four doctors in the record identified her, specifically affirmatively noted that her speech was normal. The only other opinion that I recall in the record addressing the issue of her speech was that of Mrs. Halverson, her third grade teacher, who said that she was sometimes difficult to understand when she spoke quickly. We would suggest that speaking quickly is not a disability. Regarding her, finally, I'd just like to briefly address the argument that the ALJ did not address the whether or not the child met or equaled a listing. The only listing that they're claiming to have met is the listing 112, 04 dealing with depression. And I think that we've outlined clearly in our brief that she simply failed to demonstrate either the diagnostic criteria. There's one diagnosis in the record of a doctor, I believe it was Dr. Shin, who examined her on a single occasion and diagnosed depression. There are a number of references to depression in the sort of colloquial sense, and there may in fact be depression, but even if there is, that she simply cannot satisfy the B criteria, that is the severity criteria of depression. And the ALJ addressed those criteria, and that's what the district judge meant when he referred to the ALJ discussing those criteria under the umbrella of functional limitations. If there are no other questions, we respectfully ask that the court affirm the ALJ's decision. Thank you.
Ms. Goldblum, your time has expired, but I will give you a minute if you have something you want to add.
Just very quickly, in terms of the notion of meeting or medically equaling the listings, defendant misapprehends plaintiff's argument in the sense that when we're talking about equaling, you start with the provisions of the one listing, for instance, childhood depression. But when you're looking at the combination, and as the record shows, this was a very multi-problemed child, there was no medical expert who looked at any of the medical records that were added to this file after September of 2005. So looking at whether we medically equaled, there has not been a medical opinion. And we pose it that when you look at these medical records, she does, in fact, meet the functional B criteria in terms of her social functioning is practically abhorrent. This is a child who is described as only being happy when the other people in the group were talking about things like suicide. We ask that when you review the case, that the case be remanded for further proceedings. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The case is taken under advisement and we'll proceed.